This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, I'll be joined by my friend and former colleague, House Majority Whip Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana. He'll give us a report on his first full week back on Capitol Hill after he was seriously wounded by a gunman who opened fire on a Republican baseball team practice back in June. Steve has undergone extensive surgeries and is still going through physical therapy. He'll join us in just a moment. And an Alabama high school is under attack from the Freedom From Religion Foundation. What have they done? Well, their halftime at routine at their football show is a it includes instrumental religious music. Yeah, that's it. Well, we'll talk with grandparent Susan Viller Phipps of Leeds, Alabama. She's pretty disturbed about the anti-Christian aggression of this out-of-state organization. And earlier today, I was on Capitol Hill joining Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina and a few other pro-life leaders as he and Iowa Senator Joni Ernst introduced the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act in the Senate. I'll have more on that a little bit later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Hey, let me remind you, next week, October the 13th through the 15th, is the Values Voters Summit. And today announcing that Steve Bannon, former White House chief strategist, will be one of our keynote speakers next weekend, along with many, many others. To find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com, or you can go to ValuesVotersSummit.org. And speaking of speakers at next week's Values Voter Summit, our next guest will be there as well. And by the way, last Thursday, Congressman Steve Scalise, the as I mentioned, the Republican whip in the House, who was shot in June at a congressional baseball team practice, returned to Capitol Hill for the first time since being seriously wounded, and said his prayers had been answered during the recovery process. I watched his speech from Colorado as I was out there last week, and he joins us now. Steve, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be back with you.
Well, it's great to hear your voice, and it was good to talk to you the other day. And as I texted you, I thought you did a great job in your speech last week on the House floor. What was it like to be back after being gone for such a long time?
Wow, it was incredibly special to be back. I was gone for 3.5 months, and being in a hospital for 3.5 months is, you know, it's difficult. It was necessary. They got me better. They saved my life. I was, you know, near death, but I also started the rehabilitation process of relearning how to walk, and I wanted to make sure that when I returned, I really looked forward to returning to work. I love doing the job of representing the people of Southeast Louisiana, but I wanted to be able to walk on my own. And when I walked into the House floor on crutches, but walking on my own accord, just to see my colleagues for that first time in 3.5 months, and just such warm applause and seeing a lot of smiling faces that I hadn't seen in a long time. It was just an incredible, memorable experience.
Well, as I said, I watched from Colorado as I was out there last week. You know, I can remember you making one of your first speeches on the House floor back in Louisiana, and you've come a long way, man. You do really, really well. And I was amazed. I was sitting there watching. My wife was there as well, and I saw your wife up in the balcony. And I have to tell you, what amazed me most is that you kept your composure the whole time. I don't think I could have done that.
It was hard. There were a couple of moments where I almost broke down into tears. Just so much love and the prayers that I'd gotten, but I was specifically talking about some of the people who helped save my life. And, David Bailey, my security detail officer with Capitol Police, who engaged the shooter, was there. And he ultimately was one who brought the shooter down. David was shot during that shootout and still kept going after the shooter. And he saved my life, but he also saved everybody else's life who was out on that ball field, because the shooter had an arsenal of weapons to go and kill, and his intention was to kill all of us. And
right.
Dave's a hero. He and I have cried talking together at the hospital a few times, where we both talked about our experiences. But Brad Wenstrup, my colleague from Ohio, who was also a decorated Army Ranger, he was a combat surgeon. Brad came and applied the tourniquet that saved my life. I would have not made it to the hospital alive. I was bleeding so much and nearly lost all of my blood, and Brad put a tourniquet on. When I mentioned Brad, and I didn't know where he was sitting, and a few of my colleagues pointed to where he was, and he looked at me, and he's tearing up, and he comes over and just gives me this bear hug, and I almost broke down there because that was a special moment. Again, he's one of the people who saved my life, and I talked about God, and God played an incredible role in performing real miracles, Tony, on that field that day, true miracles that I can point to that you can't explain, yet many of the things that that happened to save my life, you know, you can truly look at as real miracles on that field.
And you and I have talked about a few of those as we've spoken a few times since the shooting, as you were in rehab and in the hospital. And you've grown much deeper in your faith, you and Jennifer both, as you've walked through this challenging journey.
Yeah, this really can test you, but, you know, as Jennifer said a couple weeks ago, that which doesn't make you, or that which doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And it truly strengthened our bond as a family. But also, you know, I had a strong faith in God already, but it really shows you witness to God. And I wanted to share that with my colleagues, that I can show you real things that happened on that field that day that are not explainable, except for the fact that they were real miracles that happened that kept me alive. And, you know, and I said on the floor, I'm a walking and living example that miracles really do happen. And I think it touched a lot of people that I shared that. And it touched me just to see it up close, to see my faith confirmed, you know, that day and in the weeks and months after.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. My good friend, Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana's 1st Congressional District and the House Majority Whip. You know, Steve, when you're at that point, and you really don't know if you're going to survive, and you really do contemplate your mortality, and even more so when you look back on such a close call, it does help you reevaluate what's priority in life.
It really does. You know, and in my job as Majority Whip, I've got a very busy schedule. You know, you look at somebody with an important job like yours as the head of the Family Research Council, we keep busy paces up here in Washington. Washington is a fast-paced town. And I've got a calendar that's filled up for months down the road, and yet the day of the shooting, you know, I had a full calendar that day. They literally canceled everything, and I'm in the hospital.
Yeah, in fact, we were supposed to have met that afternoon.
Yeah, you and I were getting together with the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, Kevin Brady, to talk about some important things. And, you know, immediately all of that gets canceled because now your life's in jeopardy. And then in those months ahead, like I said, you know, spending that kind of time with my family, I already had a deep love for my family, but it just shows you what's important in life, and that's your family and your friends and the things that you love doing. And that's why it was so good to be able to get back to work, because I really do love doing this job.
Now, I don't recall if it was actually in your speech. Maybe it was in your speech. I don't know, or if it was in a subsequent conversation we had, but these things do change you. And I mean, they have an effect upon your life. So what's different going forward for Steve Scalise?
I think for me, you know, again, a renewed, just sharpened focus in both my faith, because I, you know, maybe not everybody gets to see directly just how the hand of God can save you. And I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to share that with people. And I think that as I've shared it with people already, just in these last few days back, it's had a real impact, and people have come and shared that with me, and I think it's important for people to see that. I also think have a deeper understanding about how much our friends around the world really do care about us, America, the United States Congress, the work that we do up here. You know, it's easy to talk about the things that Congress isn't doing and the frustrations that you and me and others have with the institution of Congress or just government in general. But then it really, I think, shows you that all of our friends around the world, our allies that reached out to me, some who I've known and gotten to know well, like like Prime Minister Netanyahu from Israel, but others that I'd never met that reached out and were praying for me and were hoping that I was going to be okay. What it said is they saw this as an attack on Congress, and they care about America. They want America to be successful, and it's important for us to remember that in our daily work. You know, we're working for our constituents and for the American people, but there's a lot of other people that are watching us and counting on us, and we need to kind of stand up a little taller and remember just how important America is to people around the world and how important it is that we deliver.
And is this also kind of maybe a wake-up call that some of the rhetoric in the political realm gets overheated? I mean, we don't know much about this gunman. I mean, we know some, but he was obviously killed in the shootout, so we don't know all of his motives. But we do know some of the places that he was visiting, like the Southern Poverty Law Center. And, you know, in a republic, it only works if we can engage in vigorous, honest debate without fear of violence. And once that begins, we begin to lose our republic.
That's so true, Tony. You know, look, we can have differences. And you come up to Congress, you know, you can say what you want about the institution of Congress, but the House of Representatives is a true reflection of the people of this country. Yes. And when you look at elections, you can see we are a divided nation in a lot of ways, and that's reflected in the House. We have different viewpoints. I passionately believe in conservative principles that made this country great. Not everybody agrees with me. There are people that have polar opposite views, and we debate it out. And yet, you should never make those disagreements personal. And nobody who looks from the outside at Congress should ever think that if they disagree with what's happening, they've got any justification to go and commit criminal acts. And I think that's where you've seen the line kind of blur with some people. But in this case, clearly he was filled with hate and wanted to kill people based on their political views, and that's just wrong. And at least what I saw, you know, from this evil act, I saw so much good, the goodness of people, thousands of people that reached out, Democrats that I've gotten to be good friends with over the years here in Congress, who have been on the opposite side of issues with, that came and visited me in the hospital, as so many Republicans did. It was just good to see a true bipartisan feeling of love and, you know, and support to counter the negative that started all of this.
Yeah, and that's been my experience. You know, when you serve with your colleagues, regardless on what side of the aisle they're on, you can have vigorous debate over the issues, because that's what this is about. It's about arriving at consensus, and you got to be passionate about your ideas. But at the end of the day, they're another human being, they're another American, and we stand arm in arm when it comes to those fundamental American principles.
Well, you said it incredibly well, and the way you carried yourself when you were in the state house. I mean, you were a passionate conservative. You and I were on the same side of a lot of issues, but there were people on the other side. And I think a lot of those people still respect you to this day, because they realize you were sincere, you had real beliefs, and even if they disagreed with you, you've got to respect the differences. And that's what makes our country great, that we actually can disagree and air it out. You know, we have First Amendment rights. We have Second Amendment rights. We need to respect those rights.
Absolutely. And, you know, Steve, we'll see you next week at the Values Voter Summit. Looking forward to seeing you on the big stage.
I look forward to that, too. So thanks for the invitation, Tony.
All right. Folks, don't go away. We're right back on the other side of this break with more Washington Watch.
Take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now, any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers. We need you in Washington, D.C. That's right. America is built on the courageous spirit of its people, and it is our duty to preserve the great nation by sustaining religious liberty, defending the unborn, and protecting the family. Take a stand for faith, family, and freedom at the Values Voters Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. Hear from invited and confirmed speakers like President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Michelle Bachmann, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Loesch, Franklin Graham, Ollie North, Alveda King, Kevin Sorbo, Bill Robertson, and many more. This is the place to network and meet up with people and organizations that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues that will shape the future of our country. Join us at the Values Voters Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. Register now at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you happen to miss anything on your drive home tonight, it's all archived right there at TonyPerkins.com. Lots of resources on the FRC site, which that's a doorway into the FRC site. Hey, by the way, there's information there about the Values Voter Summit. As I mentioned, Congressman Steve Scalise, Majority Whip, will be there on the main stage next Friday, along with several other members of Congress, and also just announcing today that former chief strategist from the White House, Steve Bannon, will be there, along with Judge Roy Moore, will be among the speakers at next week's Values Voter Summit. To find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the Wisconsin-based anti-Christian atheist group, is at it again with its bullying tactics. It has now focused its sights on an Alabama high school marching band. That's right, they don't like music. And the reason is because the band is performing a halftime show featuring, listen to this, yes, prepare yourself, gospel music. No, not any words, just the music. Well, in recent weeks, the Leeds High School marching band has performed a halftime show that features formations that resemble a Christian church service, they say, each week adding a new component. Along with the religious-flavored music, the marching band's routine includes church pews on the football field. I guess somewhat nostalgic. While most schools' organizations capitulate to the Freedom From Religion Foundation's demands, the band director in Leeds, with the support of the principal and superintendent, opted not to cave to the pressure. Can I have applause, please? I'll work on that. And they are continuing to perform the halftime show. With us now is Susan Villers Phipps. Susan lives in Leeds, Alabama. But she's originally from my home state of Louisiana, and she joins us now. She has a relative that's in the band. Susan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
So this halftime performance is overwhelmingly instrumental. There's no preaching. They don't take up an offering. It's just music. How are the fans responding to it?
The fans enjoy it. And in fact, bands from other cities that come and play the football games with them have come over and congratulated them on such a fine performance. It's a beautifully staged and choreographed performance. There's nothing to indicate any religious denomination or preferences. There are no prayers. There's no sermons being conducted. And therefore, it's my opinion that the ban is not in violation of any constitutional rights or amendments, any more than a school ban putting on Christmas concerts would be during Christmas time.
No, don't say that. The Freedom From Religion Foundation will go after them, too. I mean, you know, these are the these are the penultimate Scrooges. They'll go after anybody and everybody. Now, I actually watched the performance, and I'll have to say I was impressed with the band. It looked like a college band. My wife, she marched in the LSU marching band back in the day, and they're pretty good. They're impressive. But I really was impressed with the school. They must have a really dedicated band director.
Yes, he is. He's very dedicated to working with the students. They worked all summer long, gave up their summer vacation to practice. Plus, they had they had band camp, 3 13-hour days of practice in extreme heat. And my granddaughter loves it. She loves it and loves him, wants to stay in it until she graduates.
Well, I know my wife, she wasn't my wife at the time, we were dating, but she was she enjoyed it, and it took a lot of dedication, a lot of practice. And you know, look, there's some of this, you know, I'm going to say gospel music, religious music, you know, is beautifully composed, and so it makes good music for these bands to play. Now, one of these songs, I Saw the Light, was written by Hank Williams Sr., and the principal commented in a interview with my friend Todd Starnes, said that I doubt Hank Williams was trying to convert anybody. This is nothing more than these anti-Christian bullies coming into, you know, the southern part of the United States, where this is, you know, very commonplace, where people do have a religious background, and I don't imagine they're offended by hearing what sometimes it's even hard to distinguish is that a Christian tune? Is that a hymn? What is that? Sounds familiar. I like it. My toe is tapping. I mean, where does this stop, in your opinion?
I don't know. Like I said, we're a small community and we're very close, and it's very surprising that someone from this area, as they had stated, it was a local disgruntled parent that filed the complaint. And I'm just surprised that somebody from this area would do such a thing, because they've played in 6 games already, and they've played in the homecoming parade, and they've played in the parks and everything, and everyone has always enjoyed it.
I have never
personally heard anything against the band and the music they play. They're excellent.
Well, and in most cases, their complaints are anonymous. So I often wonder if there really are any parents that are upset with this that are actually in the school district. It's outside agitators, or they're just looking for opportunities to really stir something up. And I have to say, Susan, I'm encouraged by the fact that the school is not backing down. So I hope you and the other parents and the other members of that community will stand in support of the principal and the superintendent and the band leader, and not allow the bullies to force their anti-Christian agenda on your community.
Yes, I am in full support of the Leeds High School marching band, the director, Mr. Wise, and the school system. It's a good school. It's small, like I said, it's a small community. And these children are dedicated, they're very proud of Leeds Green Wave.
And they should be. Again, they did a great job. Susan, thanks so much for joining us. And please let the parents know down there we support them and we stand with them.
Thank you very much.
All right. Susan Villers Phipps from Alabama. All right. When we come back today, I was up on Capitol Hill earlier with Senator Lindsey Graham introducing the pain-capable bill in the Senate. We'll talk about that when we come back here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. There's still lots more to come.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. That music just makes me want to kind of dance. But I can't. I'm Baptist. All right. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. I want to talk about what took place earlier today on Capitol Hill with the pain-capable bill in the Senate. The Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act was introduced today. I was on the Hill in a press conference with Senator Lindsey Graham, Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma, and Joni Ernst, Senator from Iowa, along with a few other pro-life leaders. And so I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But first, next segment, we're going to take your phone calls, and this is what I'm going to talk about. We started this conversation, I think, last week maybe. I don't remember. But we're going to continue it based on our previous segment, talking with Susan from Alabama. Look, the Freedom From Religion Foundation is targeting primarily communities in the South that, you know, have a much stronger religious orientation. I mean, like my home state of Louisiana, highest churched population in the country in terms of church attendance. And so these things are very common, and people are not offended by it. Should we have to change, you know, remove all references to God? And they're going overboard. I mean, they don't want any kind of anything that represents Christianity. I mean, we're talking about instrumental music. We're not talking about a church service. We're not even talking about prayer, which I think we should have. So the question we're going to talk about today is the same as we had last week, but many of you didn't get through, and that is, would you support your local school board, your local principal, school superintendent, local city council standing up to these anti-Christian bullies, even if it requires the expenditure of government money to stop this harassment? So we're going to talk about that. But first, as I mentioned earlier today, we were on Capitol Hill for the introduction of the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. And I want to, this is a clip from the press conference today, and this is Senator Lindsey Graham. Listen to this.
The purpose of this news conference is to unveil the Senate's efforts to pass the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act that passed in the House, and Joni has been a co-sponsor since day one.
We know that at 5 months of gestational age, babies have 10 fingers, they have 10 toes, they can make faces, they can yawn, and we also know that they feel pain. This legislation can protect up to 10,000 lives like Micah's every year by preventing abortions after about 5 months of development.
Sort of put this bill in context. What we're trying to accomplish here is to get America out of a club of seven nations that I particularly don't want to be in. 20 states have passed a version of this law, including South Carolina. It passed the House yesterday with a very strong vote. And one of the strongest advocates you could hope to have is Senator Lankford, and we'll turn it over to him.
This is a very straightforward bill. This is an opportunity for us to be able to basically catch up for the rest of the world, where the rest of the world has already gone, recognizing that a child at the fifth month of development is a viable child. This bill would say if a child is fully delivered, then they need to get medical attention to try to protect their life. This is no longer a child in the womb that we're arguing about. This is a child who's been delivered.
Let's start with Carol Tobias for the National Right to Life.
It is common to read in articles about this legislation that unborn children do not have the capacity to experience pain at 20 weeks fetal age. Those kinds of claims ignore facts. Now is the time to end cruel abortions and late abortions for babies who can feel pain.
Mr. Tony Perkins, Family Research Council.
This is not rocket science. A baby at 5 months in utero feels pain. As been pointed out, the child was undergoing a corrective medical procedure either outside the womb or inside the womb, they would be given anesthesia. What is happening here in America is inhumane. It is inhumane. And, you know, we've seen that was reference was made to the seven nations that allow this. Look, I think if America wants to distinguish itself from, you know, rogue nations like North Korea that's in this League of Seven, then the United States Senate needs to take up this measure that's already passed the House three times, only to die in the Senate. This can pass. The president has committed to signing this. In fact, they released a statement of support in the House earlier this week, the White House did. And if you'll recall, I was in Las Vegas when the third and final presidential debate, this was the issue. This was the issue, the issue of late-term abortion, in which the president, in his own words, I know they were his own words, was stronger than any other presidential candidate I've ever heard. And I knew at that moment he had sealed the deal with pro-lifers. And he's committed to following through on this. But you need to speak to your senator to make sure that they pass it. Okay, coming up after the break, we're going to be going to your phone calls, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. We're going to continue our conversation about religious freedom and these anti-Christian atheists who want to scrub our society of faith. Do you want your leaders to stand up? We'll talk about it. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Okay, 866-372-7234. We're talking about religious freedom and the anti-Christian atheist. Those ones that are atheists and they're mad about it. And they want to drive Christianity from the public square. I mean, think about it for a moment. We're just talking about instrumental music. How do they even know it's Christian? How do they know it's gospel? And what are they afraid of? This Christian phobia, what it is. Do you think your school board members, your city council members should stand up and push back on this and defend religious freedom? I want to hear from you. 866-372-7234. That's what we're talking about today. But before we do that, we were talking earlier about the pain capable bill, which essentially what it says is after 5 months, abortion would be illegal. This is when a child feels pain. And I'm not going to, we've talked about that all week, but I want to, there's a new story out that I just want to bring to your attention. It's the headline, study shows link between abortion and breast cancer in China. Abortion is widespread in China due to the country's one-child policy. And by the way, we're funding that. Historically, we've been funding that through the United Nations. This president, that was a part of the Mexico City policy to pull back your tax dollars from funding that abroad. Okay, I just wanted to let you know that. And now the updated but hardly less restrictive two-child policy. Boy, they're awful generous. Reports have emerged of Chinese women being forced to undergo abortions or face harsh consequences. But to make matters worse, a study has now been released that shows a link between abortions and breast cancer in women. Now, this is according to LifeNews.com. Now, this is not a new. They're not new. We've seen this before. Texas had a study like this a couple years ago. But the left goes crazy. Dr. Joel Brind, professor of biology at University of New York and a co-founder of the Breast Cancer Prevention Institute, notes that abortion has escalated in China and South Asia over the last few decades. Breast cancer in these regions of the world is also increasing. Brind also notes that breast cancer often takes 20 years to show up after an event that may trigger it. i.e. abortion. Another reason we should revisit this whole issue. Okay, 866-372-7234. Let's go to David. Where are you from, David? I don't see where you're from. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony. I just wanted to comment about pushing back. I think our school boards and the people who are elected officials need to push back in our cities to say this is kind of ridiculous. I mean, why would we want to not expose children to multiple worldviews? I mean, in our city, I live in a city right now where this month the city orchestra is going to be highlighting music from the Reformation for the 500th anniversary of it. And it's going to be secularly attended and sponsored. I just don't understand why we have elected officials who feel like they can't ever push back in the public square.
Well, be careful, because the Freedom From Religion Foundation may be there and nail their 95 thesis to the door of that concert. Anyway, hey, David, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. Let me go back to the and I agree with him. I do think public officials should stand up and defend religious freedom. Let me go to the Freedom From Religions Foundation's press release over the incident in Alabama. Quoting, "Religion is a divisive force in public schools, including Christian-themed music and props in a marching band performance, alienates those non-Christian students, teachers, and members of the public whose religious beliefs are inconsistent with the message being promoted by the school." Well, I have to disagree. I think the left's anti-Christian hedonistic message is divisive. I mean, think about it. If I have to hide my faith as a Christian, and there can be nothing that I connect with because I don't like the secular promotion of everything that is sensual, which is what is taking over the popular culture, do I not have a right to have my, you know, the things that I like represented in public? Do I have to be forced to hear those things? You know, the reason they're getting away with this is because too many people are silent. Can't be silent. Let's go to Julie in Mississippi. Julie, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me on. I wanted to say we actually moved to where we could place our children in a private school so that they could have a godly upbringing, because the public school sector has capitulated to the left so much. I still agree with you, though, that they should stand up. And unfortunately for this group, when you hit the South, it's like you said, it's a whole different ballgame. This is, and I'm inclined to agree with you that it probably, because it was an anonymous quote, it's probably not somebody from the community. It's somebody that's trying to stir the pot. And, you know, I just believe that as God's disciples, we have to stand up. And I think that we're doing a study in Jeremiah right now where I really believe that listening is very important, and I believe that the evangelical community is finally starting to hear. I won't say a lot, but I will say a little, that if we don't stand up and do something, we're compromising everything, not just for ourselves, but for our children and their children and their children's children.
Absolutely. Could not agree more, Julie. And I wasn't going to do this, but you opened the door to the topic. Look, anybody who listens to this program for any length of time knows that I am not an advocate of putting our kids in government schools. Now, that doesn't mean that we should abandon these government schools, because they have become indoctrination centers for, you know, future leaders. Not everyone has the financial wherewithal to put their children into public schools. That's why I support vouchers, so that parents can have choices over where their kids go, because it's their tax, it's their tax dollars. They should be able to determine where they're spent and how they're spent. I am an advocate for homeschooling. We've homeschooled our children. My wife has. I'm the principal. And you know what? I think parents should have the right to do that and the ability to do that with their tax dollars. But that does not mean, that does not mean that we should abandon the public schools. Now, I'm not going to put my kids in it because of the kind of stuff that we're seeing here and much worse. But I encourage, and listen, Freedom From Religion Foundation, I encourage Christians, yes, Christians, to go into the schools as teachers and administrators and band directors, as looking at this as a mission field, to shine the light in the darkness. And I encourage parents to run for school boards. I don't care if your kids are in the public schools or not. I've got friends who are don't have kids, and they've homeschooled, but they ran for the school board because they knew that their the community was affected by the quality of the schools. We're all impacted by it. We cannot abandon in any form or fashion the public square, and we need to be engaged in it, and we need to be concerned about it. All right, I'm going to try to work in another call or two here. Let's go to Todd in Baton Rouge. Todd, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to talk about religious liberty, and thank God for Neil Gorsuch, because we really needed a conservative judge. I just wish we'd have more. Another thing, too, Tony, I'm 50, and I don't know what your age is, but I'm going to say that, make this comment. It had to be in the 1970s, I think it was, when, you know, we separated church and state. I don't know what year it was. But anyway, when they separated church and state, they said, we turn our back on God. We're going to separate this. We're going to separate church and state. So when you separate God and man, what else is going to creep in? You know somebody else is going to take over. And I'm really getting, I'm tired of hearing everybody analyzing what's going on in the world today. You know, Jesus says one thing, and he said it, and it is written, that the world lies under the sway of the wicked one. And if y'all don't believe that, then y'all heads are in the sand. And how are we going to get over this if Christians don't stand up? I mean, you need to stand up. You can't have one or two people saying, oh, believe in Christ. It's strength in numbers, Tony. And I'm
well, in the ability to share the gospel is at stake. That's what this is about, the freedom to be able to speak these things. Todd, thanks so much for the call. Let me just... I know exactly what Todd was saying, but just for complete clarity here, the separation of church and state, I mean, that's what they're calling it today. We do not believe that the government and the church should be combined, okay? And that's not what he was making reference to. That is a principle that came out of, you know, when our founders founded this country, they didn't want what they had in England. When the church and is under the state or emerged with the state, both become corrupt. But that does not mean what it has become, and that is a separation of God from government, meaning that government operates out from underneath an understanding that it is from God in which they receive their authority. I mean, I go back to what I said yesterday in 1956, when the motto of our country was changed after the pledge was changed, and the words "under God" were added. And the pledge "in God we trust," I mean the motto "in God we trust" was adopted, and the pledge was changed to state "under God." The reason for that, stating "under God," was a recognition, number one, that as under God we have, not only is he our authority, you know, our government's authority come from him, but the protection as well. And so what it's this radical view of separation of church state, which does not appear in the Constitution, he is correct in that it became a, it was used, it was pulled from a letter from Thomas Jefferson and made, you know, a prominent part of the American conversation in 1948 from a Supreme Court decision. But that's not what has for, you know, 240 years guided this country. There's an establishment clause, meaning government cannot establish. Congress, by the way, is what it says, but that was later. In 1948, it was applied to the states, or later applied to the states, and it was that Congress couldn't establish a religion. But it also says, or prohibit the free exercise thereof. So we've seen that turned on its head to where now citizens are not allowed to engage in religious expression outside the four walls of a church. That's wrong, clearly wrong. But they're trying to hinge everything on the Establishment Clause, that for instance, that by this band playing an instrumental music that happens to be gospel music, that's the establishment of religion. Really? Well, that's how far they've stretched it. And I'm saying it's time to push back, not to allow them to redefine our freedoms in this country. I mean, look at and Todd's point. He's 50, a couple years older. I'm 54. I remember back in fifth grade having a fifth grade teacher who had a big old Bible on the corner of her desk. Now, she was 1 year away from retirement, and she didn't give a rip what they thought. And I tell you what, she had some big arms on her, and I bet if those Freedom From Religion Foundation people came after her, she'd show them a thing or two. In fact, she used to line us up before lunch, and she was. And this is post 1962 and 63 when the court ruled that the prayer in school was to be gone. And again, she didn't care. This was, I don't know, what was this, early 70s? And she would line us up and say, all right, who wants to say the prayer? And so someone would pray before we would go to lunch. I mean, that's the way it worked. And you know what? We didn't have kids shooting each other and stabbing each other in school. We didn't, drugs was just beginning to make an appearance in the schools. You know, now our schools look like combat zones. Kids having kids, dropping out of school. The dropout rate is astronomical. Families broken apart. Maybe, kicking God out of the schools and out of our public life was not such a good idea. Maybe it's time we invite him back. All right, folks, thanks so much for joining us today. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done all you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.